Welcome back to Fresh Ubuntu. I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and with me, as always, my partner in crime, Harlem. How are you today?
Sorry, I'm doing pretty good. I actually am. It's been so hot here the past few days, and it's just been unbearable. So bear with me. I'm a little cranky.
It's been rainy here.
Has it been?
Mm.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
But we're tolerating it. We're managing.
You have your cup of coffee today?
I do. I have a fresh cup of coffee and a nice fresh Ubuntu, so we're all set.
Yeah. Nice.
Actually, I've decided that in keeping with the name of the podcast, I'm going to just do a fresh install of Ubuntu like every week.
And have it running in the background.
It may be a virtual machine or something, but I'm just going to have, just so I can always have a fresh Ubuntu around.
That's a good idea. It could be even a different version of Ubuntu. It could be Kubuntu, Linux.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yep. That's exactly what I was thinking. So
that's a good idea.
So this week I've got a fresh Ubuntu. Next week I'll have a fresh Kubuntu.
Right.
And a fresh Edge Ubuntu, etc. Just keep it fresh.
Excellent. So any news for you?
Well, let's see. First off, we should talk about the upcoming hiatus.
Yes.
We're going to be taking a short break late July to maybe early mid-August. We're not exactly sure. Taking a couple weeks off, 2-3 maybe, because I will be attending Sands Fire 2008 in Washington, D.C. for some training. And then I'm going to take some time off from work after that so that I can study up and prepare for the test that goes along with the classes. So in that time, we're going to use that because Harlem, a good friend and workaholic that he is, always hates to turn down the opportunity to take some time off, right?
Absolutely.
So,
I will actually, while you're taking your class, I will be sitting poolside drinking, strawberry daiquiris, margaritas, and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Plus, we both recently have read The 4-Hour Work Week, and I'm sure that's an inspiration to work much harder and put in all the extra time we can, right?
Yep. All the work that I do can be compressed into 4 hours, so fortunately.
That's pretty slick. That's pretty slick. I haven't gotten that. I haven't quite gotten there, but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, I'm just pipe dreaming. So. Anyway.
But anyway, So that's that. How you been? What are things like out there on the left coast these days?
Well, it's not too bad actually. It's been pretty hot the past few days. Today's a bit overcast, but still, it's still muggy. And I know in the east, at least in the southeast, because I spent some time in North Carolina, it gets really humid. And not quite as humid as out in the southeast, but today is pretty humid for us folks who are used to this dry weather, but unbearable. So I'm a bit cranky today. So be careful.
All right. Well, I told my wife and one of my coworkers earlier, I was a little bit testy today too. I was feeling a little bit low blood sugary.
Right.
And which is not terribly surprising, I guess, but it was the first time that I'd had any, felt like that since I've been on this Metafast diet for the last couple of weeks. I think it was just I didn't pace myself right and, didn't eat my food in the right time and stuff. So, but I've been, steadily. Yesterday was the first time that I had eaten more than 1,000 calories in one day for about like 12 or 13 days.
Oh.
So
you've been eating less than 1,000.
Yes, I've been hovering right under, somewhere between 900 and 1,000 on most days.
Oh, my goodness.
And, I'm still keeping up, getting exercise, practicing Aikido. As of this week, I'm back up to 2 classes a week, which is still, off of my peak, but, easing back into it.
Sure.
But haven't told any of my classmates or my teacher yet that, I'm on such a restricted diet because I don't want them, thinking I'm making excuses or anything.
Right.
So it's
that
been kind of fun.
Computer pansy boy over there.
Huh? Exactly. Oh yeah, you're dieting. Good excuse. Shut up. But anyway, that's been kind of interesting. But I've lost about almost 9 pounds at this point. So
that's pretty good.
I'm satisfied with the progress.
Good. All right. You should post pictures on your blog. If you haven't done so already.
Yeah, I have not, no. But
before
I've been
and
also
after.
Told, I've also been told I need to post pictures of the new scooter. So we got a lot of feedback and stuff. We'll cover that later.
Yeah, exactly. And we can take out our crankiness during the user feedback, too.
That's it. Yeah, because we did get some critical emails. So, I'm always, one for slamming the thing that makes this podcast so great, namely the user community. Yeah.
Not just our user community, but others as well.
Well, so. I was thinking mostly the Gen 2 user community, but
yeah, we're reaching out. We're reaching out and expanding our reach.
Oh goodness. Yeah, up next, OpenSUSE.
Right.
I think we'd probably better move on to the news before we alienate anyone else.
All right. So, why don't you lead us into the news?
Let's do it. Okay, this week in the news, first thing we've got to announce is the Ubuntu MID edition, MID, Mobile Internet Device Edition, has been released to developers. The tagline from Ubuntu's website is introducing MID edition, full internet, no compromise. And I see this, I don't know what your take is on this, Harlan, but this looks to me like, you know, I'm thinking iPhone killer when I see this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that's what I, you know, the layout, if you look at the, like, the grid view of this, the screenshot that they have, it's on ubuntu.com/products/mobile, if you want to take a peek.
Okay.
You know, it's made for a small form factor, like a 4-to-7-inch touch screen. You know, it's got all kinds of wireless support and all kinds of great things. But when I looked at that black background with the big icons on that little grid view, I thought iPhone.
If I
could get myself, you know, like a tablet PC or, you know, even a small thing, a little handheld or something like that, that would be just way cool. So I'm really anxious to see, hopefully somebody's going to pick the ball up and run with it on this one.
Yeah. And it looks like, specifically for mobile devices and embedded devices too. So yeah, you might be right about that. It does look, really iPhone-ish, I guess you could say. I was thinking just more of the regular UMPCs with the, you know, the tiny little 5-to-7-inch screens. But maybe I just wasn't thinking far ahead enough. But yeah, you're right. Now that I see the interface, yeah.
It looks pretty slick. And yeah, they talk, it's got full web 2.0. It's got Ajax, Adobe Flash, Java. It's something that the iPhone lacks, right? There's no native Flash support on the iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you can get that, if you jailbreak it or not.
Now, I wonder if Google's Android does the same kind of thing. Are these two things different?
I think they are different. Android is a platform and a specification, et cetera. I haven't heard any overlap between these two. So my instincts are telling me that there's going to be that, you know, that this is a separate thing. I don't, maybe at some point they may, you know, merge and this may become, you know, like part of the Android standard or something, but I don't really know. But anyway, something to keep our eyes on.
Yep, looking forward to this. Now, right now, it is just for developers only. Is that, I think, is what I'm reading. And it's sponsored by Canonical and in cooperation with Intel's Moblin.org community. And it takes advantage of the Intel Atom processor. So anyway, keep an eye on this. And it looks like a tremendous upside.
I think it looks pretty cool.
Yep.
All right, what's up next?
Up next, I got an article from Linux Journal stating that kernel developers are taking a stand for open source drivers, and I think mainly targeted to what I think probably most users are crying about are NVIDIA drivers, but 130-plus kernel developers issued a statement intending to urge hardware manufacturers to discontinue issuing closed-source drivers and kernel modules. I'm going to read part of their statement. It says, the open source nature of Linux is intrinsic to its success, and so we encourage manufacturers to work with the kernel community to provide open source kernel modules in order to enable their users and themselves to take advantage of the considerable benefits that Linux makes possible. So 130 kernel developers asking hardware manufacturers to please open up their drivers, open up their closed source drivers. I think that's a great idea. I would more than welcome more devices capable of running on Linux, and I don't see why people wouldn't. I'm not entirely sure why they would want to closed source these drivers. Again, I'm not a programmer or a developer or anything. Maybe you can enlighten me on this
It's just a part of philosophy. Some folks are just more open than others.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the same thing with all hardware vendors who want to keep things closed. I don't know. You know, I think maybe part of it's just sloppy programming. Who knows?
Perhaps. I don't see any disadvantage to doing it. That's the thing to me. And
I don't really either. I mean, I guess the big fear would be that someone is going to, based on specs on how to access the software, that they would reverse engineer how the hardware was made. And that's the only thing that I could think that might, have some degree of legitimacy.
Oh, they wouldn't do it through the drivers. They may.
Yeah.
They've already probably ripped it off to begin with. So,
Well, you know that, and I know that, Harlan. But the manufacturers of these guys, they don't know.
Yeah, okay. All right. Let's go on to the next one. Go ahead.
Yeah, next one I heard about late last week, this came in, that Linux has its own radio show. Did you know that?
No,
I'm not talking about a podcast. Yeah, I'm not talking about a podcast either. This is a genuine radio show. It's called Gutsy Geeks, and it comes out of KXAM in Phoenix, AM 1390, broadcasts every Sunday at 4 p.m.
1310.
Sorry, 1310, not 1390. And it's funny, depending on the atmospheric conditions, I think I can actually get that. I think I can receive that channel at some points. Back before I was listening to podcasts all the time, I used to listen to AM radio a lot. So, that ought to be kind of interesting. Apparently, it's been going on for a while. It started out as a show in 2001 called PC Chat, but this year they changed it over to a show devoted to Linux and open source.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that sounds kind of neat. I'm going to have to try to tune in. I'm getting all confused. Audio archives of Gutsy Geeks are available online, so you can download it. And I presume you can probably subscribe as a podcast format, too. Mm-hmm. But it's I guess it's geared towards new users. But it was kind of funny. They said, meanwhile, more technical Linux listeners may want to check out Linux Action Show, an internet-only podcast debuted in 2006.
Huh.
So, I don't know. I mean, Linux Action Show, I like it. I listen to it all the time, but it doesn't come along as one of the, definitely not one of the most technical podcasts I listen to,
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I wonder, maybe Gutsy Geeks is for, real beginners. I don't know. I'm going to listen to it and we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out and I'll let you guys know next week and and see. So, let me see. They have three hosts: Michael Cady, Nick Coons, Richard Sherman. And again, that is on 1310 KXAM, and it's a Phoenix radio station. Next up, we have KDE 4.1 Beta 2 has been released, and it's shipping its second beta, and it's just released on the 24th of June. And I say this every time they release a new KDE desktop environment that I'm going to put it on, and I have yet to put on KDE or even Kubuntu on any of my computers. So
I'll be trying it out.
All right, well, you will be
when it's out of beta.
That's right. You're not a beta tester.
No, I am. But every time I try a beta, something bad happens and I end up regretting it. So this time I'm going to, I'm going to give it a fair shot because I want to make sure that I'm testing something that is actually, roadworthy here and not something that is expected to blow up in my face.
Right. Well, see, this is a beta. This is a beta 2. So it might actually run nicely.
Yeah, you see, the thing about Beta 2, Harlan, it still has that word beta in the title.
Oh, I see.
You see that? And that's what bothers me.
Wait a minute. Now, Ubuntu puts beta software on their platform, so...
Yes, I know.
Come on.
And, I was thinking about that, too. Look, if you're just going to test it out, and, I don't want to discourage people from trying out beta software by any means, okay? Yes, I still do try out beta software. My big beef is when places release stuff as beta, but don't make it, clear to you or the fact that beta has lost its meaning and that, you should expect problems with beta software. We're about to release a beta for a small software company that I run. And, you know, we're making it very clear, look, you know, this may crash. The purpose of trying this out is to find out what's wrong with it so we can fix those problems. Right. And, you know, so as long as it's clearly marked that it's beta, then, you know, people like me who want to steer clear of stuff like this, we know that, you know, that's what we should do.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, by all means, if you're interested in seeing what's coming up, if you want to, you know, get a preview of the latest version, and by all means, if you want to help and find bugs and help, you know, with the development efforts, try it out.
Yeah. And it is scheduled for final release on July 29th, 2008. And yep. So, so the more people testing it, the quicker that they can get all the bugs out and the quicker the final release. Well, not quicker, but the more stable the final release will be.
That's the hope.
Yep.
Cool. Alrighty. So we talked about Gutsy Geeks. We talked about that. I found an interesting note that No Starch Press has updated their book Ubuntu for Non-Geeks.
Oh, great.
So this book originally came out in, I forget, 06. I think it was 2000. Why am I hearing music? Sorry. All of a sudden I'm hearing music in the background. I had a CD that I had inserted, and apparently it wasn't in all the way, and I just jostled my computer so it sat and started playing. Uh-huh. Okay, where was I? Sorry, yes, Ubuntu for Non-Geeks. first came out in about 2 years ago, August 2007, and it's been updated to cover Hardy Heron. So what's neat about it, though, is that they're publishing a sample chapter, which is available for free. And we'll have a link in the show notes so you can download that, and if you like it, you can grab that book.
Yep, I don't have this book. I have, which book was that? The Ubuntu Bible, and then the official Ubuntu book, and those were at the time were very informative, especially if you're new to Ubuntu. And I'd like to take a look at the chapter before I go out and buy this. So
now you can.
Yep, exactly. So we will post a link in freshubuntu.org, and you can let us know. And if there's anyone
that would be kind of cool if people want to read over the chapter and send us a review of what they thought of it. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or for those who have bought the book, you can let us know if it was if it's any good or not. So
this is true.
We can start the Fresh Ubuntu Book Club, kind of like Oprah does. Okay, maybe not. All right. Next up, I found a tutorial for those of you who are willing and able and have the time and aren't afraid of the command line, is a way to make a fully customized KDE Live CD / DVD using Kubuntu. And basically, it's on howtoforge.com. I'll post a link in the show notes. And it takes you through step one all the way to step 19 on how to fully customize a KDE Live CD. And first of all, you just start off with the Ubuntu Server Edition, install that, and you go on and follow their steps. And pretty soon at the end, you'll use a package called RemasterSys, and that will package up your ISO, and you'll be able to freely distribute your customized Live CD. Maybe I should do this for Fresh Ubuntu.
Well, we've talked about that before. We talked about RemasterSys and about, we were going to make our own release, Fresh Ubuntu.
Right. Uh-huh.
Just change the desktop theme, the sound theme, done.
Right.
Maybe get rid of Evolution and throw Thunderbird in, too. I would do that.
Well, now, I've been seeing a lot of tweets on Evolution.
Yes.
I don't know if you have been, paying attention to your Twitter account, but a lot of people are liking Evolution now.
Yeah, it still crashes for me, though.
Yeah, it crashes for me, too, but...
And the big thing with me, too, I mean, call it heresy, whatnot, I want something that's cross-platform so that whether I happen to be using Windows or a Mac, I've got the same mail program, same settings, and, same right. keystrokes, etc. So.
And on top of that, you can also, you have a tutorial on your blog about syncing your profiles between...
Yeah, sharing your settings and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you can just, have the exact, all your account settings, your address books, folder settings, views, extensions, everything. You can just port it back and forth easily through, you know, all platforms. It's really handy. Now, I think that if you use something like GNOME Conduit, that that would allow you to sync stuff across multiple Linux boxes as well.
Oh.
But I haven't used it. I've got it installed now, but I haven't really played with Conduit. But I think I remember seeing Evolution as one of the settings and preferences that it could sync for you.
Cool.
But again, that's Linux to Linux only. That's not cross-platform. So.
Mm. Well, that is Remaster Sys and a little bit of our rant about Evolution and our choice of mail clients. What you got up next?
That's all. That's all I got for news.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see here. A Cafe Ninja sent us a site, and he put it on our Delicious account. For those of you who want to send us a site, you can also do the same thing. Just if you have a Delicious account, you can tag all the sites that you would like us to see for /FreshUbuntu, and that will make sure it gets on our list. And if it makes the cut, then we'll talk about it. But
what if it doesn't make the cut?
Oh, then we will. I don't know. I guess we can. I don't know. We'll just have to. We'll figure it out. We can figure it out. If it doesn't
and
make the cut,
we will not talk about it.
We'll put it in the Hall of Shame. Is what we'll put it.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, Cafe Ninja sent us a link, and it was getdeb.org. A little bit about the site is a site that where you can get .deb files for certain packages that they don't have in the repositories, and some that they do. But if you're looking for a package that they don't offer in the Ubuntu approved repositories, you can look here at getdeb. No, it's not .org. Excuse me, it's getdeb.net. So anyway, speaking of getdeb, they are also opening up their source code, and they're releasing it to under the GPL license. It's been under development.
Cool.
Yeah, it's been under development for about 2 years, and he's decided, okay, time to open it up. He hasn't had any major changes in the last year, and he's never had a security incident. So he wants to open it up so he can get more good guy eyes on the source and help him straighten out his code. So, anyway, just want to put that out there. And that's it for the news. Or
actually, you mentioned something just that I just recalled. I heard about on a podcast. I did not actually read about this myself, but Linux Mint had a security update just a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
And you remember we had been speaking about my concerns. One of my concerns with running Mint was, you know, what happens because it's such a small development staff. What happens when a security update happens to something that's Mint specific, not something that's already in the Ubuntu repositories,
right?
But something, something just, you know, Mint specific, Mint only. And basically something, a bug was found on June 12th in Mint Assistant 2.4, which comes out as part of Linux Mint 5.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a change in the way that Ubuntu handles password, the password command, passwd, P-A-S-S-W-D. Apparently it changed from Gutsy to Hardy, and this caused a vulnerability in Mint. Well, they fixed it. They promptly released Mint Assistant 2.5. And updated the ISOs. From what I read, it happened pretty quickly too. Kudos to the Mint, development and security team on the quick turnaround there.
Definitely, definitely. So that is going to do it for the news this week, right?
That's all I got.
And we do have a man-page minute. So
we've got a man-page minute. We also have an interview coming up.
Do we?
We do. Yep.
Do you have him on the line?
No, but I've got a line to him though.
Okay. So let's break for the man page minute, and then after that we'll get to the interview. How about
that? Sounds like a plan.
All right. Be back in a few after the man page minute.
This week's man page minute is on the command tag. In for Peter Nicolaitis, I'm Emmett Stewart, a.k.a. Cafe Ninja. To use the command, you only need to type TAC options file name. TAC is kind of cool because it turns a file upside down per carriage return and outputs that to the standard output or the terminal. That could, of course, be redirected for further processing. This is interesting because if you are prone to write word-wrapped paragraphs, that is a single line, those will output in the correct order, meaning that the contents of the file do not look like gibberish. This command could be good if you're logging the output of a script and need to see the results in reverse order. This command is just a simple reverse ordering of a text file per character term. I can't find any proper use for the three switches that are available. It looks like they're designed to change the output trailing characters. I assume that's to turn like a Unix formatted text file into a DOS one. And that's it for this week's Man Page Minute. This is Cafe Ninja signing off.
Okay, we are back. That was TAC. T-A-C?
TAC.
TAC. TAC, TAC, TAC.
TAC.
Thanks, Cappy Ninja, right, for putting that on. Oh, by the way, he said he was sorry that it was late. And so, anyway.
Okay, I've got to ask, did anybody else notice that it was late?
No. Nobody did because it made it on the podcast on time.
See? So. Yeah. I don't know. I think he's a little too self-conscious about stuff like that.
I think so, too. So take it easy.
Cafe's got to learn just to, you know, kind of wing it a little bit.
That's like we do every week.
I wasn't going to go that far.
Well, the secret's out. They may already know by now. So
They may.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we should do an interview.
I think so, too. Who are we interviewing?
I think we should. Let's go. We're going to talk with Scott Ritchie, who is the package maintainer for the Wine package for Ubuntu. And since Wine just came out, it seemed appropriate. So without further ado, let's talk to Scott.
Okie dokie.
And with us on the line, we have Scott Ritchie, the package maintainer for the Wine package for Ubuntu. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. We've got some questions. We thought with Wine 1.0 just being released, it would be good to get somebody from the Wine team on the show. So for our newer listeners or folks who just may not be so familiar with it, can you tell us in a nutshell, what is Wine?
So Wine is a wonderful little program that lets you run Windows applications in Linux. And when it works, which these days is pretty often, you can completely rid yourself of Windows and still use your old application, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it just fits along right alongside your Linux desktop. It doesn't, it's not like running like VMware in its own little special window. It's not like something like the emulators like you have with Super Nintendo emulators, like ZSNES is my favorite example of what Wine isn't. You don't like open up a Wine window and then run applications from it. No, it's just completely integrated alongside everything. You ideally, you almost won't even be able to tell you're running a Windows application, just another application.
Cool. How what's the state of Wine these days for compatibility? I mean, how, I know a while ago anyway that some of the most recent versions of certain popular apps weren't supported. How is that getting better these days?
It's actually interesting because Wine has been getting a lot better a lot faster. What tends to happen is that some like really, really complex applications work perfectly now. Like people use Wine to play World of Warcraft all the time, and I get tons of their email thanking me because I can keep up their addiction. And,
that's let me interject for a second. That's a personal pet peeve of mine. I still haven't gotten it working really reliably. So.
Right.
I'll talk to you about that later.
it's interesting, right? Because for a lot of people, it is hit and miss for some applications. And some of these are not deficiencies in Wine so much as deficiencies sort of elsewhere in the system. Wine is notorious for exposing video driver bugs that do really scary things like crash the system or freeze it up. But it's something that like would have happened with anything doing it the same way Wine does. Wine is just sort of the first app to expose the drivers in that way. But anyway, what matters to you is if your application will work, right? And so what I can say is there's a very good number of Windows applications right now that work so well that people just can use them fine. Like I've been playing on Steam games for now for like a couple years, and when I went to last Ubuntu developer summit, I had a stranger sort of just come up to me at random and just say, "Thank you for making Steam work in Ubuntu, because now I can play Half-Life and Half-Life 2 all day, and it's something I could never do before, and I can finally switch to Ubuntu full-time." And it's gotten to the point where, given a random application, the odds are better than chance that it'll work in Wine. Like, you should actually try it and before otherwise. Whereas, like, 2 years ago, the odds were pretty good that it wouldn't work unless you put some effort into it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's great news. So.
Yeah.
All right.
One of the reasons we see more applications go faster is because as Wine gets more and more complete, it just begins to hit that sort of critical point where it covers enough of the what Windows applications need. Because if we're missing just one thing, it'll break the entire application in many cases. So once you have enough things implemented right, the same way Windows does it, then stuff just starts to work magically.
Right? That's cool. So what is your role with my, I mean, I know I said you're the maintainer, but what does that mean exactly?
Okay, so I have two jobs really with Wine. My main job is I take the upstream source code when we make a new release, which is every 2 weeks, and in most recently Wine 1.0, and I convert that into a Debian package, and make sure it builds right and that it uses all the support that we have for it on Ubuntu. In the past, there have been problems with like not building something that we had because of improper configuration or something like that. So make the Debian package and just put it into Ubuntu so that installing Wine for the end user is just as simple as, you know, clicking apt-get install Wine, or, you know, clicking the Wine package in Synaptic, or applications, add applications, enter in Wine, and have it work from there. In the future, my work for Intrepid, hopefully, is to make it even easier than that, and have Wine be prompted to install when you just double-click on a Windows application, and it says, well, you need to use Wine to run this, and you don't have it, would you like to install it? That's sort of a future project for now. Back to the question, my other job with Wine is I do a lot of work upstream with Wine. I'm not just building the packages. I am interacting with most Ubuntu users. I'm the guy who reads every single Wine bug filed on Launchpad. I get a lot of personal email from people just asking for help with Wine. I patrol we have a Wine forum now on Ubuntu forums that I read in and post a lot. And we also, I also interact upstream at winehq.org, and I update the website there, and I even have a separate Wine repository if people want to use the latest sort of beta release of Wine and not the wait for the package to seep into the next version of Ubuntu.
Oh, cool. That is cool, because we had talked about how, someone had mentioned in previous podcasts how the Wine packages, you know, might lag a little bit behind the official, you know, ones. So, and that also, right. I think you also touched on this a bit as to why do, you know, you say you take the source code, you compile it up, you make it a deb package. Why do we need a specific one? Because I know that the Wine team releases their own Debian packages on the Wine HQ.
That's me.
Oh,
that's you too.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. So, are you part of the? Are you Harlem? I messed up on your toes here, but we're on the topic. Are you part of the Wine developer team then?
Yes.
Not just for Ubuntu, but Wine proper.
Yes, I do consider myself a Wine developer. I hang around in the Wine developers IRC channel a lot, but I'm kind of unique among the Wine developers because I don't do much, if any, of the Wine C code. But that's fine because there's just so much more work into the project that has to be done than actual hacking on C code and writing application like DLL files and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's just so much more to it. There's the, you know, install process, the packaging, the website, and for when I first came to Wine, it was several years ago, the hoary days, and it was very difficult to use Wine. And none of that was a problem with any of the Wine's, like, functionality or C code or anything like that. It was just something that wasn't being worked on. And so I appointed myself sort of usability czar and just said, here, I want to help. And the rest of the developers sort of nodded and said, okay,
cool.
Do what you can.
Great. Okay. Well, that explains another question I was going to ask too. So great. All right. Now, so do you have, you're part of the Ubuntu community as it is, right?
Yes.
And do you have, yeah, go ahead.
Community developer. I recently became a master of the universe, right, Motu. So I have which is useful for working on the next release.
You cut out for just a little bit there. We got that you're a Motu and kind of lost you after that.
Sorry. Yes. So I'm a Motu community developer, and I can now sort of directly upload new Wine packages into Intrepid, right, for the next release. So I can also work with whatever other universe packages there are as being a community developer.
Cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. And Harlem, you had another question?
Yes,
for Scott?
And my question is, what is the significance of a 1.0 release for Wine and Wine users all over the world?
So the question really matters, because, like, what makes this Wine release different from the 50 we've had, you know, in the past couple of years? And what the main difference between the 1.0 release and the sort of bi-weekly releases we had all the time was that this release is meant to be free from regressions. And what that means is one of the most common complaints about people using the regularly updated Wine packages, that they get a new Wine every 2 weeks, is that sometimes there will be a change in the code that's meant to fix one application, but it breaks another. And so it was often the case that someone would use a newer version of Wine, and for them it would have been worse than the old one. And so this was just sort of a bad thing to have. It's just the reason you don't want to use beta software over and over again. So what we did is we planned for a few features that we knew we wanted to have in Wine 1.0, like Photoshop 2 working, or Photoshop CS2 working. And then we said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to declare a month-long code freeze, and during that time, we're not going to add anything new, and we're just going to try and fix every old regression we can find. And so at the end of that, we have Wine 1.0. And what Wine 1.0 is supposed to be is the best version of Wine yet. Like, if there's an older version of Wine that runs an application, then Wine 1.0 should be able to. Now, it's possible we missed something, and there's still some outstanding regression or something like that. But your confidence using Wine 1.0 is much, much, much higher than using the bi-weekly releases or even the release that came with Ubuntu Hardy.
Cool.
All right. And that's great. I guess so. Let's say now, you know, we're a Wine user, or we're just curious about this, and, you know, any of our listeners have some spare time and they want to help. What sort of things might they do to get involved with the Wine project, whether directly related, you know, to the Ubuntu packages or Wine in general?
So it's interesting you ask that, because a lot of people seem to want help with Wine. If you go to the Wine forum, there's just a ton of users that, you know, answer questions, and I'm very thankful that they're there, because I can't possibly answer every question that's out there. There is a Wine team on Launchpad that you can register yourself as. It's currently got about 60 members, and I've yet to figure out a real use for that team other than subscribing them to bug reports. But these are sort of inefficient means of helping. Probably the most effective means of helping Wine itself is to go to winehq.org and help sort of upstream. You can go to the applications database and test your application and become an application maintainer and make sure that if it breaks in the newest version of Wine, the new beta releases, that you submit a regression bug report. You can be extremely helpful and do what's called regression testing, where you can find the very exact patch that broke your application. Those are the best bug reports ever, because you know exactly what's wrong. If you know C and are really, really good at that, you can help learn the Windows API and help us expand on different parts of Wine. There's always parts of Wine that can use development help. It's never the case that, you know, we just have too many developers or something like that. There's always areas that need work. And another thing that you can do that people don't often do that much is just email the wine developer list and say, well, look, here's what I can do. How can I help? Because we all have ideas about how, you know, you can help us with our own little side project or help get this one application working or that sort of thing. If you're particularly interested in programming, there's also a Google Summer of Code projects you can apply yourself to. And if you're not a programmer, you can still be pretty helpful. For instance, I myself came into Wine not knowing any Wine C code or how to work with that. I do know C, but I never really dove deep into Wine. But instead, I was able to, you know, improve things in many other ways. Now we have a wiki. We have all these development tools that just make it so much easier for any random person to kind of come in and contribute in some meaningful way.
Cool.
All right.
So related to that, actually, I want to talk about is unlike some other projects like Mozilla or Apache or whatever, we don't actually have a Wine Foundation, right? Some sort of nonprofit things. There's no way to like just sort of give money or something like that to the Wine project. What we have is a corporate sponsor, Codeweavers, who employs a good chunk of the Wine developers and is very, you know, very helpful in that regard. But there's no like way to give money to the Wine project if you're
now,
looking for
actually that, sort of. That led to another question. Are you an employee of Codeweavers?
No. Okay. I'm not. The closest I've got is talking to the CEO on the phone, just to chat. but I don't work for Codeweavers, and I don't work for Canonical either. So
okay.
I'm just a community member.
That answers our other questions. So, you know, we've got to have you on more often. You're real easy to interview.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. So on that topic of Codeweavers, though, would you consider is buying a copy of Crossover Mac or Crossover Linux, for example, which are the commercial repackaging of Wine, would you consider that a form of support of Wine?
You know, I really would. It's not as like sort of pure as like giving money to a nonprofit or something like that, but it really is like really closely tied to the Wine project. The Codeweavers was started by a bunch of Wine developers who wanted to keep developing open source Wine and still be employed at the same time. And so, like, if you look at it, it's kind of different from a lot of companies' interaction with open source who maybe use open source because it's useful to them and they kind of, like, you know, release their patches because they have to and that sort of thing. It's really, like, one of the most open source companies I've ever seen. Like, everything that gets into Crossover gets into Wine. And there are a couple of exceptions to the user interface that's sort of Crossover's little proprietary edition, and that's sort of the stuff that I kind of work on for Ubuntu, right, making a free version of that. But in terms of actual, like, you know, gritty details of what makes Crossover really good is what makes Wine really good. And so what's good for Wine is good for Crossover. And so you see Codeweavers doing a lot of nice things, like hosting the Wine website and employing most of the developers and, you know, hosting the Wine conferences and doing all these things because that helps Wine and that also helps Crossover.
Cool. All right. So that's good. That's comforting too, because I know, you know, when some folks, when you hear about, you know, like a quote unquote corporate sponsor, they're, you know, a little bit of paranoia kicks in and they're wondering, like, well, you know, are they keeping all of the good stuff to themselves? And, you know, why, you know, maybe their Wine is suffering as a result, but right. I don't get that impression. So.
Right. Well, the good reason and the good news, even better news, is that even if Crossover or Codeweavers wanted to do that, now they sort of can't because Wine is LGPL'd and they have to release the source code to the Wine that comes with Crossover along with Crossover. And so if you were, like, really, really suspicious or something like that, you could always just use that Wine or see how that applies. But they don't do that because there's no reason to. Mm-hmm. So the Wine...
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that's about all the questions I have. Harlem, anything else?
No, that's everything for me. That clears up a lot of things. Thank you very much.
Terrific. Scott, it's been great talking with you, and thanks again for joining us. I'm going to keep your phone number on file, because the next time I try to get WoW running under Wine, I'll be calling you. Hope you don't mind.
You'll be calling me up on my cell, right?
That's right. Yes.
I to my fault, try and respond personally to every email I get and every time someone messages me on a forum or on Instant Messenger. And I'm increasingly beginning to wonder how much I can keep up to it, because we calculated the other day that there's something like 800,000 Wine users on Ubuntu alone. And this translates to about 2.5 to 2.8 million Ubuntu or Wine users across Linux as a whole, depending on how big Ubuntu is. That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's something like 10% of the Ubuntu user base. You can and at least have Wine installed. And as Wine gets more and more useful, that can only get larger. So it seems like Wine is the killer feature that people ask for, right? I can't tell you how often I ask people about Ubuntu, and they say, well, what does Ubuntu need? And sometimes they say things like, oh, it needs to work with my hardware, or needs to install more easily, or that sort of thing. But the most common response I receive is, oh, I need Photoshop to work, or oh, I'd switch if only this random application I use for my business works. And as Wine gets more and more complete and more better, it's becoming much more the case that that actually happens for users. And so it's very, very compelling what can happen soon.
Yeah, well, good. No, that's great. I'm excited to hear about that. And I just had one more quick question just came back to mind. One of the goals I think it was for Hardy was better Wine integration or better Wine support. Am I correct on that?
Yes. And one of the reasons that was a goal for Hardy is because I sort of lucked into going to the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
Okay.
It was an interesting story. Canonical sponsors this event called FOSS Camp, and it's held the weekend before the Ubuntu Developers Summit. And so Canonical sponsored me to come out to FOSS Camp because I'm involved with Upstream Wine, and they wanted just a lot of open source upstream people to come there. And so I came out to FOSS Camp, and I realized that it was held the weekend before the Ubuntu Developers Summit for Hardy was going to come out. And so I sort of asked around, and I found out just by pure chance that one of the Ubuntu developers couldn't come. He got sick or something like that. So there was an open hotel room. And so I actually managed to bump into Mark Shuttleworth in the elevator and said, hey, can I stay for the Ubuntu Developers Summit and take over this hotel room? And he says, sure, yeah, comfy room and everything. And so I got to go to the Ubuntu Developer Summit, and while I was there, one of the things I did was host a sort of discussion on what to do about Wine. And one of the things that came out of that was the specification you're referring to, right? The better Wine integration for Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of that was done by me personally, and a lot of it hasn't been done yet. Some of it needed to have changes done in Upstream Wine that we weren't ready to deal with yet. So part of the process since Hardy's been released has been done by me to sort of like find developers to work on these issues. So it's been, some of the aspects have been tabled, but some of them are really looking up. For instance, one of the parts of the how to integrate Wine really well is rather than having a separate sort of Wine configuration menu, to just build it into the normal preferences menu, right? Like, why can't I go to System Preferences Windows Applications and, adjust, have a really simple Wine interface there? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was Wine didn't know how to deal with an external program changing its own setting. And so part of that is coming about now. We've got our own repository of for development work, and I've been working with that, and I'm going to be designing the interface for that to work in Intrepid now that I have someone working on the code for Wine to make that happen. So Hardy got better at Wine than what came before, but it's going to keep getting better, and that's my job, or the job I give myself whenever I find time to work on Ubuntu.
Well, on that note, I would like to thank you for the job that you do. This has been a great little interview, and you've answered a lot of questions, and we just want to say thanks for joining us today, and thanks again for the work that you do.
All right. You are welcome.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Take care, Scott.
All right.
Scott Ritchie, goodbye. Wine packager and maintainer of a wine for Ubuntu.
This song about the stupid yeah leaders we'll get for Africa here. When did they respect human life at all? So, and we know say this would that they be our papa, that they be our mama. So we got to beg them, nee. So more beg them together, beg.
All right, and that was Scott Ritchie. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, don't have time to do feedback right now. So we'll do that some other time, I guess. And we've got a lot. I do want to say thank you to everybody who did email us and Twitter us and stuff this week. We got a ton of feedback. We will get to it next episode. But, you know, keep them coming. We really like them. Comments, criticisms, all the same. Bring them on in.
And
we love
kind of figured out how to get more comments. It's just to act stupid,
yes.
I guess. So.
Yeah, pretty much. So
and it shouldn't be hard for us.
On that note, no, you know, I'm not a genius, but I play
That's
one
right,
on a podcast, right?
So.
So yeah, so if anyone else out there, if you'd like to tell us how superior Red Hat is to Ubuntu, you know, send us the messages. If you want to talk a little more about electric vehicles, that's fine too. If you want to send a correction to us regarding, I don't know, Java, JavaScript, Firefox, whatever. Any corrections, critiques, criticisms, you can send those to harlem@freshubuntu.org. If you have compliments and you think that the show is just rocking this week, send them to peter@freshubuntu.org. And follow us on Twitter if you want. Friend us. You know, I accept just about anybody who's a part of the podcast or a listener of the podcast. I follow them back to see what they're up to, you know, for a little while anyway. I'm at twitter.com/Nicolaitis. Harlem is at twitter.com/Harlem. And the website is freshubuntu.org. Do us a favor. Tell a friend about the podcast. We want some more listeners. And that's about all I got. Harlem, anything else to add?
That's all I got. Just visit us on our IRC chat channel, too. We're at #FreshUbuntu. And I think that's about it. You got it all covered. Oh, the music was provided by Iota Promonet. And that's it. We'll see you again next week.
Have a good one, everybody.